You've been cut off or refused welfare.
Used car salesmen and golf pros who run Ontario have decided your disability is no longer disabling.
Perhaps you're being forced to work 140 hours a month to get your $500 welfare check.
You or your entire neighborhood have been brutalized by
the police. Removed from Canada and sent to a country where you'll be killed or thrown in jail.
You're being ticketed often for not having a fixed address.
The shelter you stay in has no interest at all in human rights.
You're facing a government tribunal hearing without
the owner of
the building wants you out so it can take advantage of anti-tenant legislation.
You're being treated unjustly due to your economic position or skin color, and you're sick and tired of the corporate agenda and feel it's time to stand up and fight back. So what are you going to do? So who are you going to call? Well, if you're wise, you'll call OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. If you want our help, just call. If you want to join, give us a call to set up an introductory meeting, 925-6939 in the east, 530-1550 in the west.
And good Friday evening, and welcome to another edition of Radio OCAP here on CKLN 88.1 FM, and welcome to all our listeners on the internet at www.ckln.fm. Tonight we have, again, we're always talking about this. We'll continue talking about this probably for about another year from now because of the fact that we got a new expanded format, and that's going to include regular updates from Don White's bringing us the new and improved shrink wrap with Psych Survivor updates. We're going to have Sean Brandt and Sue Collis calling in from Tyendinaga, bringing us some Native news out from the Belleville area. And we will also have on the show Gaetan Haru, who brings us news from the shelter and system out in the East End, and news from the street, news on the various dealings of City Hall and their loyal thugs, the Toronto Police Service. But tonight, very special guest with us, Stephanie Good, who will bring us up to date on OCAP's immigration dealings. So stay tuned. We got an excellent show coming up for you right now.
And I guess we'll go straight into it with Stephanie. We're going to talk a lot. There's a lot to talk about. If you've been listening to OCAP Radio, you know we've been talking about this stuff almost nonstop. There's a lot going on in the immigration world in Canada. We got the Safe Third Country Agreement coming in later this year, as well as the ongoing deportations, particularly targeting the Algerian community in Montreal. We've been talking a lot about different cases that OCAP has been working on fighting deportations, and I believe we are actually going to hear a little bit more about some of those cases tonight, and as well the potential jailing of all non-status people who enter Canada could be coming down the pipeline very soon in the province of Ontario. And also to combat that, OCAP has been working on these issues for a long time, but to combat it, a broader coalition is emerging in Canada and in Toronto under the banner of No One Is Illegal. And Stephanie, I'd like you to just start off by maybe introducing that.
Yeah, the No One Is Illegal banner or campaign is one that has been raging in the Western world for a number of decades, but has been sort of predominantly based in European countries. And what we're seeing now in Canada is spurred by the incredible efforts of folks working in Montreal after the lifting of a moratorium against Algerian non-status people. The seriousness of this fight has taken on sort of a more, I guess, orchestrated level. And when I say that, I don't want people to think that this isn't a fight that hasn't been going on, you know, since borders have become something that allow the free flow of trade, but not the free flow of human beings. All of the people that we work with and thousands of other people are waging this fight constantly, in many different forms, whether that's living in Canada without papers, the reality of which is really shocking. And we've talked about that on the show, you know, for years. It means no health coverage, no student loans, no access to social assistance, no access to affordable housing. All of these reasons are why immigration casework falls under OCAP's umbrella so logically. But in terms of the No One Is Illegal campaign, I guess what's going on is that there are groups working in a number of cities, organized groups, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver most predominantly, and there's now an increased effort being made to sort of coordinate strategy and action amongst those cities and those various disparate groups. And, you know, very important, I guess, beginning to that is going to be a consulta that's happening in Montreal towards the end of this month, which is specifically a non-status focused consulta with non-status people themselves in attendance and their allies as well, demanding and working on how to push the demand that all people without status have that status regularized. And in Toronto, I think we're looking at the anti-war movement as a logical place to start to publicize this campaign. This Saturday, there's a banner flag-making workshop happening at 25 Leonard Avenue, which is in Kensington Market, which everyone is welcome to come to. And the outcome of that workshop will be that there will be banners and flags being flown on the 15th of February, which will be another large anti-war rally in Toronto, calling together people who support the demand that status be regularized for non-status people, who support the demand that people should have the right to choose where they move to and choose to live in safety and freedom. And obviously drawing attention to the fact that that war is not happening only in places outside of our borders, but within our borders as well. And as you touched on at the very beginning, there are a lot of very serious alarm bells going off right now. Some of that's been in the works for a while, post-September 11th, changes to legislation around security and you know, the parameters that the state has to investigate and revoke citizenship and deport people that are, and I quote, deemed a threat to national security. But this stuff isn't stopping. What's happening really alarmingly on the border right now is, you're right, the Safe Third Country Agreement is set to be sort of enacted later this year, but already at the U.S.-Canadian border now, before, up until now, if you had been coming from the United States or were within the United States and wanted to make a claim in Canada, you were assured the possibility of doing that. And there's a massive backlog at the border right now, and people are getting turned away from that border and assured that they'll instead have their claims heard in the U.S., you know, in the interim, in this wait period. And what's happening instead is that people are getting turned away, and not just turned away, but actually locked up, deported, and basically whatever, thrown off the continent. As well as that, I've been watching memorandums coming down from Immigration Canada that are giving new guidelines to immigration officers around what to do at the border. And they're pretty straightforward and pretty clear. If the person that you're interviewing appears at all uneasy, if the person that you're interviewing has what you deem to be unsatisfactory identification documents, and, you know, bearing in mind that that's a very, very sort of individual decision that the officer gets to make, when in doubt, basically detain. And that's what the most recent memorandum that I read has been telling immigration officers at the border to do. And this is directly connected to stuff that you have already highlighted on the program in terms of extended, expanded detention facilities in Ontario. And a No One Is Illegal movement burgeoning in Ontario makes a hell of a lot of sense. Obviously, the demographic of Toronto, the fact that there's two very big border crossings, Windsor, Detroit, Niagara Falls, Buffalo in Ontario, the fact that there are super jails that have wings that are being leased to the feds to use for immigration detention. It's the, you know, the breeding ground for resistance that is already happening, but that could burgeon very seriously, is right here in Ontario as much as anywhere else.
I'd like to obviously talk about some of the cases that OCAP is working on right now, because I know that there's a never-ending stream of cases that's coming into the office. But as well, more generally, you already touched on a lot of stuff that's going on the border. But there's also stuff going on. There was a lot of noise. I know we talked about it on the show a few weeks ago. There's a lot of noise coming out of the misnamed Ministry for Public Safety and Security, and primarily the minister of that ministry, Bob Runciman, who went on record very recently as saying that he is looking to bring an Australian-style detention system into Ontario, and as part of that to be leasing out part of the massive Kawartha Lakes detention facility for the use of jailing all people who enter Canada without papers. I know we've talked about different actions that took place in the aftermath of that announcement, but I know that's not the only thing going on. And maybe you could just comment on exactly what he means by, first of all, an Australian-style detention system, particularly in light of events that have been happening against the Australian-style detention system in Australia recently, as well as just the general comments on the direction that Immigration Canada is heading as far as jailing non-status people.
Yeah, well, as you said, Runciman has obviously felt comfortable calling for an Australian-style detention system, which I'll explain in a minute, because of what we're now seeing coming down from Immigration Canada, the actual, you know, minimum standards of what's required to, you know, quote, release somebody into Canadian society. And the fact that Canada has never been like the United States, where they do have much more of a tendency to jail first and ask questions later. Yes, the bureaucracy is grinding, and yes, the acceptance rate is much lower than, you know, immigration propaganda would have people believe, as far as opening our arms and welcoming newcomers to the country. But we've never had an extensive jailing of asylum seekers and refugees and immigrants. And Runciman calling for an Australian-style system is abhorrent. I'm sure that listeners are familiar with the way that the Australian government immediately detains asylum seekers, non-status people that come into the country in isolated detention camps that are often located extremely far away from any sort of urban center, which then means extremely far away from family or legal or translation support of any kind, that detainees, people who are held in those detention centers, have had years and years of incredible acts of resistance from within the walls, be that drinking the shampoo that inmates are given, be that sewing their lips shut in hunger strike, be that throwing themselves against the razor wire that surrounds these detention camps. And last summer, there was a coordinated effort from outside and within, which ended up seeing the fence around Woomera, one of those detention centers, cut open, and a number of detainees escaped to freedom. And as you were alluding to, just last week, another breakout took place with a van of people, masked people, driving up to the perimeter of the detention center, opening the fence again, and a number of detainees being herded into this van and driven away at extreme speeds. The escape actually involved some harm being done to detention officers, and things involving near runovers and lead piping and so on and so forth. But it's incredible desperation and it's incredible courage. And the Ontario government and the Canadian government should be marking its words if it's, you know, carelessly throwing around demands for a system that at all resembles the Australian one, that, you know, that does follow this trend that we see in the United States as well, of jailing first and asking questions later.
Maybe just to turn the focus a little closer to home, OCAP does a tremendous amount of incredible, incredible work around immigration casework. When people come come to OCAP basically at the end of a long process with, in many cases, no further action to take before deportation or facing imminent deportation despite having humanitarian compassionate claims in the system. And also, OCAP not only takes on these incredibly difficult cases, but has an unbelievable record, an absolutely astounding record, in fact, of success rates in these cases as far as preventing people from being deported. And that's done in the usual OCAP manner of zero tolerance and disruption of the mechanisms of deportation. And a good way to maybe to introduce this conversation or to start talking about OCAP casework is to talk about one case. It was, I think, only a few weeks ago that we had Dorothy Igaro on the show being interviewed, and the news keeps getting better and better for Dorothy, and it's shaping up to be one of OCAP immigration's biggest and most dramatic victories.
Well, I think every victory is big and dramatic because it means that somebody who was going to be separated from their family was going to have their life completely shattered by the racist, classist, unequivocally discriminatory mechanisms of Immigration Canada gets to stay. And, you know, gets to stay shouldn't be what I have to say. It should be a given. Dorothy, yes, has actually received confirmation that her, what is called a pre-removal risk assessment, when a Canadian immigration officer sits down with a stack of papers and decides whether or not returning someone to the place that they fled from would be risky to them or not, and the criteria for what's deemed risky is pretty damn tight, I can tell you that. But in the face of the pressure mounted by several actions taken at the Enforcement Centre and the Ontario Regional Office and media attention and Dorothy's fierce unwillingness to be spoken down to by the various officers that were dealing with her case and her refusal to let them roll over the fact that she was going to potentially be separated from her very small child or have to bring her daughter to a country where her daughter would have been forced to undergo ritual procedures that Dorothy doesn't agree with. She has indeed received confirmation that her landed status has been won, and it's an incredible victory as much as it is every time that somebody is successful in what for us is a couple of years of work, but for people the people involved is often a decade or more of banging up against the constant walls and barriers that this bureaucracy throws up. It's astonishing that people prevail and persevere. And, you know, we see people sort of at the end of a very long struggle and have the honor of working with them and standing next to them while they, you know, force immigration officers to look at photos of their children and tell them how on earth they're justified in destroying people's lives.
Okay, and I think we're going to move the show forward into other areas, but thank you very much, Stephanie. I'll just give you a little bit to wrap things up and give some final word on Immigration Canada.
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to obviously to attend the anti-war march, but to also march under the banner of no one is illegal and an end to all deportations, and to, you know, talk about within your communities, within your circles, of the connections between what the larger war machinations and what's happening at home, what those connections so obviously our colleagues, our comrades in Montreal are currently launching a campaign to confront the very alarming deportation of a large number of Palestinian non-status people that are living in the Montreal and Ottawa area, and we'll keep people posted on the progress of that. To pay attention to the words of all levels of Canadian government, who are taking more and more space to say what they're saying in terms of, you know, the lengths to which they're prepared to go to encourage the free flow of capital and prevent the free flow of humans across borders, as they are so entitled to. Thanks.
Okay, and if people are interested in getting involved, tomorrow at 2 p.m. at 25 Leonard Street is a sort of informal kickoff to the No One Is Illegal Toronto, with banner making and discussion over paint. And the next anti-war march is February 15th. That's a Saturday at 1 p.m. meeting at Dundas Square, which is the new paved area at the corner of Dundas and Yonge. And also, just to let you know well in advance, Sunday, March 2nd at 2 p.m. at the 519 Church Street Community Center will be a report back from the No One Is Illegal Consulta taking place in Montreal just before that. And that will include speakers from various groups, Status Coalition, Canadian Arab Federation, and OCAP.
As well, right now, I thought I'd just, for those of you who don't have access to Now Magazine or don't read it too much or haven't been able to, there is an amazing article in there right now. It's a segment of the Privacy Commissioner George Radwanski's letter to annual report to Parliament, which was just a scathing analysis of where we're headed here in Canada, and I think it bears repeating. And so I'll just read that off to you right now, because he just doesn't pull any punches here and really, really shows us where we're headed. The article's called Who's Spying Now? This excerpt starts, "The fundamental human right of privacy in Canada is under assault as never before. Unless the government of Canada is quickly dissuaded from its present course, we are on a path that may well lead to the permanent loss of privacy rights that we take for granted and important elements of freedom. We face this risk because of the implications of a series of initiatives that the government has mounted or is seriously actively moving towards. These initiatives are set against the backdrop of September 11th, and anti-terrorism is their purported rationale. But the aspects of that present is the greatest threat to privacy either have nothing at all to do with anti-terrorism or present no credible promise of effectively enhancing security. The government is quite simply using September 11th as an excuse for the new collections and uses the personal information that have no place in a free and democratic society. And still the government is turning to a resolutely deaf ear. Specifically, I'm referring to the Canada Customs and Revenues Agency's new Big Brother passenger database, dramatically enhanced state powers to monitor our communications, a national ID card with biometric identifier, and the government's support of the precedent sending video surveillance of public streets by the RCMP. Each of these measures establish a devastatingly dangerous new principle of accepted privacy invasion. I'm well aware that these scenarios are likely to sound alarmist. Certainly, the society I am describing bears no resemblance to the Canada we know. But anyone who is inclined to dismiss the risks out of hand should pause to first consider that the privacy invasive measures being implemented or developed would have been considered unthinkable just a short year ago. The place to stop unjustified intrusions to fundamental human rights such as privacy is right at the outset, at the first very attempt to enter where the state has no business treading. Otherwise, the terrain will have been conceded and the battle lost. The situation is made all the more worrisome by the fact that the government is doing all this in a blatant, open, and repeated disregard. Regrettably, the government has lost its moral compass. In the months immediately following September 11th, I was in fact quite optimistic that with regard to privacy, the government was on the whole being balanced and thoughtful in its response. But the floodgates appear to have burst. Now, September 11th is evoked as a kind of magic incantation to stifle debate, disparage critical analysis, and persuade us that we live in a suddenly new world where the old rules cannot apply. A popular response is, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. If we allow the state to sweep away the normal walls of privacy that protect the details of our lives, we will consign ourselves psychologically to living in a fishbowl. That sort of life is characteristic of totalitarian countries. Government officials have reportedly told me privately that pressure from the United States government is a strong motivating factor. Let me be blunt. The United States made us do it cannot be a sufficient or acceptable justification for the government. Canada is a sovereign country, and if we apply the premises of war to the challenges of dealing with terrorism, we will be committing to a war with no end. Such a war will eerily be reminiscent of Orwell's 1984. The reality is that there are no security measures that can provide complete protection against murderous individuals willing to lose their lives to make their point. Even the most repressive regimes have not been able to immunize themselves. We also need to keep the risks in perspective. In any scenario, the average Canadian is far more likely to come to harm in a traffic accident than in the hands of terrorists. And that was from Now Magazine, an excerpt from George Rudwinski's annual report to Parliament as the Privacy Commissioner. And, you know, I do want to stress that he is speaking from his privileged position where the old rules were just as terroristic for people living in Canada as are the new ones. They're just more broadly applied, it seems, right now. But definitely he's making a nod here to Palestinian reality in Israel, that despite Israel putting down one of the most repressive regimes on the population of Palestinian refugee camps and enclaves and Bantustans that exist right there right now, has been unable to provide security for Israeli citizens, and that this is just definitely not the road to go down. We see that coming clearly to bear in Canada's immigration policy.
That little excerpt from the Privacy Commissioner's report has inspired Stephanie Goode to think of a few other things that are right in line with today's topic on OCAP Radio.
Yeah, I was just going to add on the heels of the excerpt that Bernie read and what we've been talking about, and the spooky echoes of previous sort of police state tactics that we've seen in North America. If you're a permanent resident in Canada, that is, you've received your landed status, the Immigration Canada said, all right, it's okay for you to stay. You are now required to pay for and carry on your person at all times a Maple Leaf card, which is a plastic identification card that has all your details on your person. And so, the very, very much in line with the excerpt that Bernie had just read. And as well, people should definitely pay attention to the fact that there's another bill in the House right now being reviewed by the powers that be, which would enable the Canadian state to revoke citizenship from anyone who is not Canadian born under the rubric of national security. And what's really terrifying about this bill is that not only is it about revoking citizenship, which, we talk about people who are here only on visas, or who are here illegally, or who are here as a refugee claimant or some sort of undefined status. And this is citizenship that we're talking about. And the horrifying part is that this decision would be made in a secret court. So that means that the defendant would never see the disclosure that the Canadian government had, the evidence that the Canadian government purported to have against them. And the decision whether or not citizenship was revoked would be made by a single judge, and there would be no recourse for appeal. So this isn't a bill that's actually come to pass yet, but I know organizations like the Canadian Arab Federation are definitely putting it out there that people have to raise a pretty serious ruckus about this bill. And please pay attention and keep your eyes out for this sort of thing that's really being sneaked past us. There's more going on than we can even tell. Watch out, I guess.
And on the note of fighting back and raising a ruckus, There is something going on this week that I encourage absolutely everybody who has Wednesday morning free to come out to. There is a young offender who was charged in the wake of June 15th who is awaiting their verdict. I'm sure regular listeners will recall the case in question. It involves the breaking of a certain peace officer's arm on June 15th, that officer being Charles Stern, who, despite basically being caught in a lie on the stand, still managed to enter his testimony into the record. And this young offender is facing a rather grim-faced judge who will be delivering a verdict on Wednesday, February 12th. That's this coming Wednesday at 10 a.m. in Old City Hall Courthouse. And it would be absolutely fabulous to have that courtroom packed with supporters. And I encourage everyone to come out this coming Wednesday, 10 a.m. at Old City Hall Courthouse. And on that note, I'm going to give people in the downtown core some dates and times to write down in just a minute. Chief Fantino has been touring the city trying to present a kinder, gentler police force, a police force that's responsive to citizens, and on that note has been holding town hall sessions across the city. And the chief is slowly making his way into the downtown core. So if you are a concerned citizen who may be concerned with the fact that at Jane and Finch, Fantino shouted down and basically told a 15-year-old girl who questioned him on the role of police in her neighborhood to fuck off, if you're concerned about the fact that people in Rexdale stood up and walked out of their meeting to protest Fantino's policies of racial profiling, then perhaps you are concerned enough to go and confront Fantino in your own neighborhood when he comes. If you live in 42 Division, which takes up most of Scarborough, Fantino will be speaking on February 17th at C.O. Bick College, which is located at 4620 Finch Street East. If you live in 11 or 14 Division, which comprises the western half of downtown, including Parkdale, then February 19th, you can find Chief Fantino at Bishop Morocco School, which is located Bloor and Dufferin area at 1515 Bloor Street West. If you live in the east end of downtown, and perhaps you are a concerned citizen concerned with 51 Division cops beating the shit out of people at Cherry Beach, perhaps you're concerned about police harassing people and issuing tickets in Allen Gardens, then I encourage you to come out to 350 Parliament, which is Lord Dufferin Street, and join OCAP in confronting Fantino in 51 Division on February 25th. If you live in the central downtown, March 3rd in Committee Room 1 at City Hall, this is 52 Division. Perhaps you could come out to confront Fantino there. And if you live in southern and central Etobicoke, March 4th, the 22 Division meeting will be taking place at 3131 Lakeshore Boulevard at the Assembly Hall. And there's been some inspiring stories coming out of the city around these public meetings, but there's also been a couple of warm receptions for the chief. So I encourage everyone to make a frosty welcome for him when he comes to your neighborhood. As well, just to let people know, a little bit of follow-up on last week's show, we talked a little bit about, Gaetan was on the show and he talked a little bit about the shelter bylaw that was coming to City Council this week. Well, City Council had a busy, busy week dealing with the endless stream of scandals that's coming out of them. They were busy voting down anti-war motions, etc., etc., and they didn't quite have time to discuss the shelter bylaw, which is fine by us. The shelter bylaw would impose a moratorium on seeing any new shelter beds being opened in the East End. And this, you'll remember, is in the context of having street cities shut down. It's in the context of 60 Richmond closing beds and cutting back hours. So certainly it's unacceptable. As well, there's a provision in that shelter bylaw to have police recruits serve as hostile security. So City Council has decided that they're in no rush to rush this through. OCAP was at City Council on Tuesday morning, bright and early, over the ropes, handing out our version of the shelter bylaw or our take on it to every city councilor who was there before being asked to leave the chambers. And now we're hearing that the shelter bylaw won't be going back before council until April. And certainly OCAP will not let it pass quietly at that time. I believe we are pretty much out of time, but before we go, I think it's only fitting that we say hello to the latest and newest and most cute member of OCAP, and that is Jubin Laplante, who is currently plotting against all levels of government in East Toronto General Hospital after being born yesterday. And congratulations to proud parents Omid and Nancy. And that's it for OCAP Radio, and we'll see you next week. There is suffering in the streets.